was sexy.
How much do you like that?
I like it a lot.
But how much specifically?
I don't know. I got no answer for that.
Well, we're rolling. Episode 3.
Episode 3.
Revenge of the new year.
Revenge of the new year.
2018 is here. Year of the Moth.
Oh, yeah, baby. Year of the Moth. I'm excited.
By the way, guys, spread the word. 2018 is the year of the moth.
Get it out there.
Do they need to know why? I mean, can they just have faith in us?
I think it should just be a faith thing. It should be a faith thing. Year of the Moth. I agree. Get it out there. Tag it on buildings.
Yeah, and when we have the website fully commercialized and all that, maybe we'll get you a Year of the Moth t-shirt.
Maybe.
And years from now, when they've forgotten all about us, your t-shirt, your tattered, rusty t-shirt that you use to wipe down your loads will be the only evidence of this podcast.
Yeah. So.
Well, by the way, though, you know, speaking of the new year, the last episode is titled Wendigo New Year, but we didn't really even get into
we kind of
rookie mistake.
We kind of dropped the ball, if you will, on that one.
We did. Both of our balls were dropped. Do you have any particular wishes for the new year?
Yeah, I got a lot of things. You know, a lot of things in the works, some projects. You know, I got going around in my head. I'd like to get to see the light of day this year. Think it'll
be
good.
So it's going to be a creative awakening.
Yeah,
your creative passion is going to lose its virginity to the world.
Going to be lots of writing. Going to be some podcasting in there. You know, it's going to be a good year.
Some podcasting.
It's going to be a lot of podcasting. I'm sorry.
Our goal, if you're listening, is 50 by the end of the year. We're hoping for
50 people.
50th episode extravaganza.
Oh yeah.
What a terrible word.
What about you, bud? You got any plans for this year?
Keep losing weight.
Good for you.
Been doing pretty well with this diet so far.
Yeah, you've done extraordinarily well, actually.
It's known as the ketogenic diet. One of my relatives referred to it as the clankogenic diet, which to me sounds cooler. It sounds like, you know, if you're on the clankogenic diet, you head over to the junkyard after school and just wolf down some scrap metal.
Get some clanking.
You got a furnace for intestines.
Shooting up some clank.
Or maybe the junkyard owner's name is Clanko. Hey, I'm Clanko.
Maybe.
You come for some more metal, kid? You know? I don't know.
It's possible. I could see
that. But spread the word. 2018 is both the year of the moth and the year of the Clankogenic diet.
Yes, Clankogenic. May it always be remembered fondly.
I agree.
Yeah.
Wholeheartedly. I'm so fast now. I'm so much faster. Yeah. That's the main thing I've noticed. By losing a fuck ton of weight, I'm quick.
You're speedy.
I am speedy. I'm the fucking Flash.
Well, can I say there is one thing that, you know, as if some of you may remember, I recently married. My wife and I, we like to create things. We like to do some crafty projects.
Bedroom fantasies.
No, just some crafty projects.
Sex dungeon design.
But we...
you minored in that.
You know, we've been getting into some crafty things, and I think there's something this year that I want to make. I might need your help. It's something called...
A homunculus?
No, it's actually called the Philosopher's Stone.
Ooh.
Yeah. And
tell them.
Tell everybody.
Why do you want to make it? First of all, what is this? What's going on?
To quote someone from Austin Powers, I love gold.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's really the only reason you need right there.
So you're saying that by having this Philosopher's Stone, how will that get you more gold? I mean, I know, but they don't know.
Well, the Philosopher's Stone is a highly sought-after material in alchemy that allows...
What is alchemy, though?
Alchemy?
Yeah, I'm trying out the Socrates method where I just say why and what to everything you say.
Well, alchemy is... an old scientific way, I guess, of trying to convert other, you know,
compounds. Best described as pseudoscience.
Pseudoscience, yes. to turn things into gold. I like to
think of it as a combination of science and magic.
That's a good combination. It's a
more mystical kind of science.
Yeah, yeah, it's a, you know, best of both worlds type scenario for sure.
Yeah, I think alchemy got big in that sweet spot where the scientists knew a bit about how the world worked, but there were many things they clearly did not understand. So it's kind of like you're combining a more open-minded, mystical set of beliefs to what little science you already have.
Yeah.
It's kind of like when whenever I'm reading about it, it's like they're kind of guessing at what was possible. Like when you see those old movies from like the 60s or 70s, and it takes place in the 80s or 90s, and you know, we're blasting off to Jupiter for vacations. It's hard to, I mean, imagine if you're discovering all these scientific things for the first time, you're much more aware of the possibilities than the limitations when you're starting out. So
yeah,
it makes sense that you would kind of, and in an age when even I would say the majority of scientists were still religious individuals, you're more likely to try to somehow reconcile the two.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, for instance, if you can believe that, you know, I don't know, that you can create, an acidic substance by combining this and that and adding some heat, but you also believe that, you know, truly believe that, you know, a past deity, you know, Jesus maybe walked on water, turned water into wine. Your mind's going to try to find, you're going to try to connect that science and that mysticism, you know?
Yeah. Well, and that's where alchemy lies, man. Right in the sweet spot.
Right in the sweet spot. Trying to
use what they thought of at the time as scientific ideas or thoughts to turn things into gold, most commonly lead, mercury, other, you know,
basically rare undesirable, earth metals. Less desirable metals, yeah, into something more desirable.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And that's because they all thought it was just, you know, it was going to get there anyway, you know, a rock or something, something like lead,
they,
you know,
over the gold,
course of millions of years, possibly, yeah, it would eventually get to its most perfect state, which is gold. And they just thought, you know what? Let's help it out a little bit. Let's get it there earlier so we can enjoy it as gold instead of lead.
Which kind of makes sense if you consider that they would have believed that the earth probably wasn't too old. Because think about it, if they had known that the earth was billions of years old, they probably wouldn't have bothered so much because they would have thought, why isn't everything gold by now?
Mm-hmm.
But are they, it's the interesting thing that we found in our respective research on the Philosopher's Stone, is that it's not just found in the Western tradition, the Western mythos.
Western civilization.
It's actually various cultures have their own, either their own aspiration of achieving the creation of the Philosopher's Stone, or within their own mythology, their own sacred text, they have an object that had similar properties to what they were seeking.
Mm-hmm.
So they saw the creation of it in their own time, you know, as far back as ancient Greece.
Yeah, ancient Greece.
As far back as ancient Greece, was his name Zosimos, something like that?
Yeah, Zosimos of Panopolis, I believe.
Panopolis.
Sorry if I'm butchering the pronunciation.
As far back as ancient Greece,
yeah, I mean,
they were striving towards this ideal of creating this
long time ago.
You could say godlike substance that was capable of taking things to their natural course, is one way of putting it.
Yeah, exactly.
The practical application would be making yourself filthy rich.
Just, oh yeah,
so rich you can, yeah, buy. Yeah,
you, it's like having a printing press, like for money,
basically
a mint, if you will, in your possession. You can just make as much valuable currency.
Well, the irony is, as we know, if anyone had actually had the Philosopher's Stone for any amount of time, they would have killed the value of gold by inflating the market.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been absolute just chaos. They would have,
and the interesting thing about it is, gold and silver came to be known as very valuable, but I believe that all goes back to the creation of commodities as currency, because it would have started back when people were basically roaming the wilderness and battling animals for survival, and they might have found, you know, a cool rock and thought,
it's nice and shiny.
This makes for, yeah, it's nice and shiny. It'll make for good decoration. It'll make me look special and cool and important. And so, if I understand correctly, that's, it's, these items were used, items like gold and silver, certain objects were used as decoration, as a status symbol, partly because of their rarity, and then that is what allowed them to become currency, because they were valuable in, you know, bartering systems. And then eventually they were just like, well, why don't we just, we found enough gold, we found enough silver, let's just buy and sell everything with gold and silver. Why not?
Exactly. So, but I mean, can you imagine just having the capacity to just create that?
King Midas, you could just King Midas
everything. He didn't even have to have a lab or anything. He just touch, boom, there's some gold.
It's
for
kind
you.
Of, it's yeah, like it's a godlike power in your pocket.
But it's also, with Midas, it was a curse, though. Ended up being a bad thing.
True. It's a poignant lesson about pursuing something greed. Too obsessively, which is either going to lead you to turn all of your friends and family into gold or turn you into a Wendigo. Could go either way.
Either way. Terrible.
It's a wonder the world isn't full of Midases and Wendigos. But so, the interesting thing about the gold and silver is, if you think about it, sure, they're valuable today and they are rare, but the fact that they became considered to be more valuable than anything else is arbitrary. Like, we made that decision to say,
it's just enough
this
people...
silver is more valuable than this black piece of rock over here, this piece of coal. You know, the silver is more valuable.
Yeah, it's just enough people put value in something
and
collectively,
yet, well,
and it catches on.
The goal of getting the Philosopher's Stone was to make silver or gold, but what if they had said, you know, let's make chickens the most valuable form of currency? Everybody just would have been breeding chickens, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of, what I'm saying is, it's kind of odd that it's almost like a strange coincidence that, you know, these precious metals became the valuable thing, and then somehow this object, usually considered a divine object, just happened to turn things into those particular metals.
Hmm.
So draw your own conclusions.
Yeah.
But
the Philosopher's Stone doesn't just deal with turning metals into gold
true.
Or silver.
It has
another
uses.
Use. Another big one. Can you guess what I'm thinking of? From
are you talking
research.
To me or are you talking
I'm
to
talking to you. No,
oh,
I'm talking to
me.
You. I'm talking to you, bud. You know what I'm thinking of?
Well, I don't really have to necessarily have to guess.
Exactly. It's just
but I'm gonna guess it could do some mystical shit.
Yeah, you're right. You're on the right path at least. Yeah, you got it.
Could it possibly heal sickness?
It could.
Maybe restore or prolong youth?
It could. I mean, you can live forever.
Well, you know, some alchemists actually believed, you know, if you've ever read anything from the Bible or heard about certain characters in the Bible, there are people who live for centuries. And
one common
explanation for why it was so important to seek the Philosopher's Stone is some believe that Adam himself, maybe either God gave him a Philosopher's Stone, a portion of that substance, or maybe it was in the Garden of Eden, but that he passed it down, and that over time, that's why you had his descendants supposedly living, you know, 800, I think
Methuselah
lived over 900 years.
I think he was 998.
I say he was just hitting up Whole Foods, getting some kale, getting some spinach, just, you know, keeping his vitamins up. And
could have been a Philosopher's Stone, though.
Could have been.
Could have, should have, would have.
Maybe it's like a Princess Bride, Dread Pirate Roberts situation where the original Methuselah is like, okay, somebody else gets to be me now, and they just pass it down.
Yeah. We don't have pictures, unfortunately. So
who knows?
Who's to say?
But so other than the Western tradition, it was, a similar object can be found in the Hindu, the Buddhist mythos.
Yeah.
Correct?
Mm-hmm.
And that has multiple names.
Yeah, several, three or four, I believe.
It's referred to sometimes as the Cintamani.
That's the only
stone,
one I can pronounce.
Chintamani. Yeah, that one has probably the simplest phonetics. Where did, so let's say in the Western tradition, maybe the original Philosopher's Stone had some kind of a, it could have had a divine origin. Where did this version of that substance come from in the Hindu tradition?
I believe they fell out of the sky.
Fell out of the sky. Delivered by Amazon drone.
Yeah, exactly. Plopped right down here on Earth from the sky. How? Aliens?
For sure, yeah.
Aliens?
I mean, yeah.
I don't know. I it could be... No, never mind. Aliens.
Well, and we had talked about aliens. How in some of the... I want to say it might be the Bhagavad Gita, which is the kind of the sacred, the Buddhist text. Is that where they have descriptions of those flying... basically like UFOs, what sounds the description...
Yeah, sounds kind of
like UFOs.
Yeah, UFOs.
It might have been the Bhagavad Gita, but I know that somewhere when they describe the different... deities, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, I guess if they're describing different deities, that would be part of the Hindu tradition.
Mm-hmm.
But I suppose that Buddhism isn't necessarily separate.
I don't see why they
couldn't believe in certain Hindu deities and also believe in, you know, the story of...
I wouldn't know. Buddhism. I'm not a Hindu or a Buddhist, but...
Me neither.
Yeah, so they fell out of the sky, which, I mean, that's pretty crazy, like... Technology.
Well, what fell out of the sky? Was it just the Sintamani stone?
There was three others.
There were supposedly three others. We don't know what they all were, but one of them was a... it's referred to as the Buddha bowl or as a singing bowl.
Yeah.
The other two are... I guess they didn't turn poop into gold because we don't...
Yeah, they didn't make it. They didn't last. We didn't like whatever... That was that the aliens gave to us. We're like, we're not really a fan of that.
Well, that's kind
of
the thing.
Stick to the other two.
Well, the thing about it is that at that time, at any of those times, even up to the 16, 1700s, most people were living it pretty rough. They had a real man versus wild thing going on.
For sure.
So the Philosopher's Stone, you could see it as a way of turning a negative situation, you know, an abundance of waste and rot and you know, worthless material into the greatest riches mankind has known.
Yeah.
Is it only for... Did it only have supposedly physical uses, though? No.
No, yeah, no.
It did not.
It can prolong your life. It can heal you. Basically...
Well, but that's still a physical use. Is the philosopher, as we know, the Philosopher's Stone was not considered by all to just be, you know, a household object that you might keep, you know, in your dresser drawer.
Right.
You could think of it as more of an ideal, you know, like it's like achieving the ultimate version in a spiritual sense. It could be thought of specifically in the Hindu, the Buddhist tradition.
Yeah, the more Eastern.
Right. And, well, the legend goes that if you held the Sintamani stone in your hand and recited a particular mantra, it has a name, I'm not sure what that name is, but that it could essentially turn your earthly suffering into enlightenment, could bring you closer to becoming more Buddha-ish in some way.
It's called the Dharani.
The Dharani?
Mm-hmm. The Dharani. It's a...
The Dharani mantra. It's a mantra.
That's what
they use, right? Mantras. That's what their spells are called.
Mm-hmm. Something magical. Like that. Yeah. But yeah, it's a tradition that maintains that one who recites the Dharani while holding this stone is granted the wisdom of Buddhas and is able to understand the truth of the Buddhas. And
so it's
turns,
kind of like a connection to the divine.
Yeah, you gain all this spiritual wisdom and knowledge by reciting this Dharani while holding the stone.
Sure.
And that's pretty
it's
cool.
Also actually Christ himself in some ways has been equated with the Philosopher's Stone simply because of the miracles that he, well, not simply because, but partly because of the miracles that he performed. You know, he healed people. He would it's known as transmutation. When you transmute one thing into another thing, you're basically just turning it into that thing. So he transmuted water into wine. I'd be really impressed if he could have turned that water into Guinness Extra Stout, but I don't know if that was one of his abilities.
I don't know.
Did I don't know.
Irish
but
people exist back then? Then no.
Yeah, I guess not.
Too bad.
But it can be found in many cultures. In fact, there were numerous Muslim scholars, I think primarily around the 8th century, who they actually had a debate amongst themselves as to whether it was even possible to change one substance into another.
Right.
Like, I mean, they had some serious scientific mojo.
Oh yeah.
The Arab world in those days, and I believe
leading in science, math, medicine.
For sure, yeah. They got to the party pretty early on.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they're still drunk in the bushes out back right now.
Yeah.
Everyone else has gone home pretty much. But they had a name for the substance of the Philosopher's Stone. They called it Al-Ixir.
Which that sounds is actually like the word elixir.
That's because the word elixir is derived from that. Because the Philosopher's Stone is also referred to as the elixir of life. Sort of. They're not the same in every legend, but you have a lot of sort of mixing of
they've
artifacts.
Crossed paths.
Yeah.
So
for sure.
Well,
what does it look like in the physical form?
It actually has, I mean, people have referred to it as almost like a gel liquid like substance.
So it's not necessarily an actual rock.
Yeah, it's not always a stone. I believe it can be in stone form, but a lot of times it's ground down into like a red powder, which is the ultimate state, I believe, of the Philosopher's Stone. If you got the red powder,
that's the best stone, form to use it in is if it's in a powder form.
That's the China White, man. Like you.
Yeah,
want that.
I know. Yeah, I was gonna say that. I know another magical power that can help you get things done.
Yeah, that's the powder. Good stuff.
Powder,
and then you know you got your white powdered one, which is
it's
pretty good.
So it comes in two colors.
Yeah, it comes in two colors.
There's crimson tide colors.
Give you some variety. I've also heard it described as like a candle wax type texture.
The white version?
Yeah, and it's like a just kind of like a orb of candle waxy stuff. So it's not always a stone.
Do both kinds do the same thing, though?
The white one actually can only turn things into silver.
Ooh.
So it's like, you know, you got
forever in the shadow of red.
You got Amazon, and then you got Amazon Prime.
There you go.
So, you know, you can only turn things into silver. I mean, it's still great. Amazon, sponsor us, please. It's still great. But, you know, I mean, if you want the good stuff, you got to jump up to Prime, get the red version.
Get that subscription.
And then, you're getting red powder, Philosopher's Stone, A-grade stuff.
A-grade stuff.
Yes.
Primo. Straight off the boat.
But how do you make a Philosopher's Stone? Where do you get this red powder? Like
I looked into this, it really surprised me that there wasn't, you know, just a solid, you know, sort of a cookbook, sort of a Julia Child's, you know.
Yeah, where's Rachel Ray's Philosopher's
Where's Rachel
Stone?
Ray, where's her Philosopher's Stone recipe when you need it?
Nowhere.
You're letting us down, Ray.
Yeah. Come on, girl.
But I mean, it varies. But the best way to understand how it was approached is to understand that even as the different methods, the different supposed recipes varied, the basic idea was it had these different pieces. This material had to go through these particular state sort of well, not state changes, but chemical changes, usually resulting in changes of color ending with white or red.
The
problem is, back then they didn't use the terms they'd use today. They, you know, it's not like an actual recipe where they're like, you know, get some salt and you put it on to boil and then, you know, add a pinch of garlic. They had their own names for all of these.
And not even just names. I mean, they had images too. It's like ancient emojis almost. It's like they kept it as like a secret code because I don't think they wanted people, you know, I mean, if you found the secret to turn, you know, some easy to find metals into gold.
Basically, you don't want that in the wrong hands. Here's one. George Ripley called the steps the 12 gates, and these are the names of the steps. This is he gave these as the steps, but I guess if you were an alchemist around his time, you'd know exactly what he was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, but here we go. Calcination, that's number one.
That's important.
Solution or dissolution, so I guess dissolving into something. Separation, conjunction, putrefaction. Mm. I like that one. That's cool.
That's an important stage.
Congelation, which might be where you get the gel substance.
Yeah, possibly. Substance.
Cibation.
Mm-hmm.
Sublimation. Fermentation.
Mm-hmm.
Exaltation, which confused me because I feel like, isn't that like a more of a spiritual? If you exalt something, isn't that like
it might have coolest. It might have a scientific.
I love you, One
well.
Direction. I exalt you.
There you go. I mean, it could be either one.
11 is multiplication.
Oh, got a little math in there for you.
Well, I believe it has to do with somehow increasing the amount of matter, almost like you're creating it from nothing. And 12 is projection.
That's very
interesting. You think he got out his Super 8 film and just ran it through the projector?
Yeah.
Played all of his home movies?
Possibly so. Possibly so.
Well, not everyone was so forthcoming about their own particular recipes. As we know, but you're about to find out because I'm going to tell you right now. There's a book. Well, there are multiple books, actually. If you just Google how to make Philosopher's Stone, you'll come up with some old texts and probably some YouTube videos made by some very deranged individuals.
Yeah, there's one. A guy made it in his backyard.
Wow. Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
That's the American dream.
More power to you.
Making stuff in your backyard with limited knowledge and very little
just an internet connection. That's all you need, man.
There you go. One particular text that I thought was really cool. It's called The 12 Keys of Basil Valentine.
Wow.
And Basil Valentine was not actually a particular person. It was actually more like a pen name, but works were published by various authors all under the name Basil Valentine, presumably because they were all working towards the magnum opus, which is the name of this grand pursuit of the Philosopher's Stone. It's called the magnum opus.
Mm.
So everything we've just told you about is can be filed under the magnum opus. It's the amazing race. It's everyone trying to get there however they can. Planes, trains, and automobiles. But the 12 keys, it's interesting. They're primarily known for the fact that the keys themselves are actually 12 images. They're like illustrations, like works of art.
Mm-hmm.
And supposedly contained within these works of art are the clues to the creation of the Philosopher's Stone. I guess each one is like a step. Sure, and I guess you would have just had to have been a worthy rival or just a worthy scientist or alchemist to understand what each clue is trying to get at.
I read that there was almost like a secret society of alchemists that understood that this was something, very powerful potentially, and it must be kept from the general public. So they used these pictures and hidden codes and messages to, keep information out. So anyone, open it up, you see a picture of a green lion devouring a yellow sun.
Mm.
No one's going to know what that means. I actually know what that means.
That's cool.
That is, I believe that is represents an acid. But the problem is, they don't say which acid, so that's why we have difficulty recreating.
Well, I think the idea is that if you were a part of that society, you'd know.
Yeah, you would know which acid, but
because it may go further. It's a green lion devouring the sun. How big is the lion? How big is the sun?
Oh,
that's,
yeah.
That's what's interesting is that you don't know for sure which details are most relevant because it was centuries ago.
Exactly.
Who's going to have any idea?
Yeah, and like you said earlier about the colors, like before it transforms into the Philosopher's Stone. And you get this, huge spectrum of colors in, I guess, your vial, your beaker, your scientific equipment. And the symbol they used for that was a peacock in a flask, but its tail, or its feathers of its tail, were sticking out of the flask. And that represented just a beautiful, array of almost, I'm picturing psychedelic colors, swirling in this flask.
Whoa.
Exactly. And it's just swirling around. It's really beautiful. And I don't know, I thought that was a cool symbol. They use, but once again, they got to keep it secret.
That would make a cool T-shirt.
Yeah,
for
keep
sure.
us, sometime soon, possibly.
By the way, if at any point, and we encourage this, you're interested in contacting us, maybe there's a specific topic that you think is worth exploring. Maybe you have a cool ghost story. Maybe you have a really stupid, funny story.
Or maybe, if you just want to tell us to go maybe kill ourselves.
Or maybe you want to correct us. Maybe we got something wrong. We don't want that. We don't want our pseudoscientific information to be even more misleading than it has to be. Shoot an email over to thefolks@menbitingdogspodcast.com.
Yes, sir.
That's the email address. It's thefolks.
F-O-L-K-S.
No, thefolks.
Yeah, well, yeah. You know,
the folks, one
people
word,
can understand what you're saying when you're
menbitingdogspodcast.com.
There you go.
Just, you know, we want to know what's going on with you. We want to know what you're pursuing in the new year, for one thing. If it's creating the Philosopher's Stone, I don't know if I can help you there.
If you somehow do it, though, let us know. We'd love to murder you and steal it from you.
For sure.
Got to get that gold.
But back to the 12 Keys of Basil Valentine, which to me sounds like a cool, a really shitty, like a hipster folk rock band name.
I could see that. Here are
the
12
Keys of Basil Valentine. You'll find your gluten-free gift satchels tied to the bottoms of your recycled wicker chairs. Thanks so much.
I like that. I could also see it as a Wes Anderson film.
Oh, yeah.
The 12 Keys of Basil Valentine.
Yeah.
I like that. Wes Anderson, hit me up.
Wes, if you're listening to this, big fan. If anyone can solve the riddle of the Philosopher's Stone, I'm sure it's you.
Yeah. You got us, buddy. Hit us up. Love you. Peace.
I'd be terrified if Wes Anderson hit me up for anything.
Yeah, I'd be kind of scared.
Yeah.
I mean, that man's got to have something else going on in his brain that's just horrifying. I don't know.
Did you see the trailer for his new movie Isle of Dogs?
His new movie
Isle of Dogs.
Mm-mm.
It's awesome. It's animated.
Oh, interesting.
If you're listening to this, go look up the trailer for Isle of Dogs. Wes Anderson, if you're interested in sponsoring this podcast, let us know.
Yeah.
But what would you do if you had the Philosopher's Stone? Let's say whatever it took to make it, you've got it. You're ready to use it. You can use it as much as you want because that's the legend. It's not a one and done. It's not a one pump jump.
Mm.
You know, if you've got it,
oh, this thing can go on.
The wealth is infinite, and as well, you know, your life could be as well.
Well, here I think first I would like to get the white one that turns things into silver.
So you'd rather have the silver than the gold?
Because I think if you show up to a We Buy Gold place or something like that, and you're like, hey, I've got a ton of gold to sell to you. I don't know. You might raise some red flags. So I think there's a right way to go about it. You do silver first. You start out with that. The price of silver is lower. You know, I feel like people wouldn't care as much, or, you know, you wouldn't raise as many red flags.
So you're saying that because the silver wouldn't be flagged as much and maybe the inflation wouldn't be noticed as much?
Yeah, maybe not. I don't know. I wouldn't want to upset the market and ruin it for everyone. So I wouldn't, you know, just create
a ton of gold. So you're a wizard and a humanitarian.
Exactly. Like, I want to be rich, but I don't want to ruin the world. So there you go.
You'll change your mind once you're rich.
Mm-hmm. So we do that. We start with the silver. We work our way up to gold. And then maybe if we can figure out a way not to make me immortal, I don't want to live forever. That sounds absolutely terrible. But maybe
what if you
like,
didn't age though?
Yeah. Well,
if you're picturing yourself as like a goopy pile of rot that's shitting your pants every 2 seconds.
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
Not.
Who would want that?
Even if you don't age though, like if everyone else around you dies, then there's no fun in that.
But you can make new friends.
I don't think that would work out that well. From what I've seen in TV and film, it wouldn't work out that well. But if you can find a way to where I age just slower and I could maybe live to be like 150 and
like
I never tell anyone about the Philosopher's Stone. So I freak everybody out. They're like, oh my gosh, that dude is 150 years old. He's the oldest person.
Well, like, as we know, the Men in Black would come knocking on your door.
I know. Sure. People would be fascinated that I live to be 150 years old and they'll ask me my secret and I'll just be like, oh, every day I like stuck a grape up my butt and that's how I live to be 150. And they would, you know, I would catch on, hopefully. So, I don't know. It'd just be fun to like be so old that people ask you for your secret to long life, and you can just, you know, make something up. Like the people that say, "Oh yeah, I have a pack of cigarettes and three cans of Diet Coke a day. That's how I live to be 105."
I thought you didn't want to ruin the world.
Didn't want to what?
Ruin the world.
Oh, ruin the world.
But you're cool with it if it's a really sick joke, like if it's just a great prank.
Oh, I mean, that's just...
If the world dies a comedic death, then it's justified.
I think it would just blow over, you know? I would be in the news for like 3 days.
Well, you know what I think would happen? If there's any evidence to suggest that you created the Philosopher's Stone, I think whoever dropped the original among the Hindu people would probably come knocking on your door.
That or J.K. Rowling.
Maybe. By the way, you may have made the simple connection to Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone. Are we allowed to say
Sorcerers?
Is there any problem saying book titles?
We're not promoting it. Actually, I'm.
I don't know the laws.
Sucks,
yeah, he's a hardcore Harry Potter hater.
Yeah, no, there's no problem saying that. But yeah, or the Sorcerer's Stone. Sorry, if you are in the United States, which
if you're a red-blooded American, you've been lied to.
Yeah, we don't take kindly to no philosophers over here,
yeah,
boy.
I don't know. I wonder what the logic was.
I think it's just because people over
here. To be
fair,
Sorcerer sounds cooler.
Yeah, Sorcerer does sound cooler, but I just think philosopher has maybe lost its meaning from when the Philosopher's Stone was given its name, and people
so
in
think
Europe
in
might,
the olden days it had a more mystical meaning.
Yeah, people in Europe might remember it well because, you know, Western Europe was a big place where, you know, alchemy was a big deal in medieval times, and you know, medieval times over here in the Americas, who knows what was going on.
Medieval times in the Americas is a dope restaurant where you can eat giant turkey legs and watch knights joust.
I don't think there were knights in the Americas.
You don't know about medieval times?
In the Americas, there weren't knights.
The restaurant, Medieval Times.
Oh, I've never heard of this, no.
You've never heard of that?
No.
It's the ultimate Renaissance dining experience.
Wow, I love Renaissance-themed things.
And it was in, what's the Jim Carrey movie? Is it The Cable Guy?
I mean, he's in that movie, yeah.
Yeah, where they go to the Medieval Times.
Oh, I haven't seen the movie, so I don't know the restaurant.
He's
but next time.
Oh wait, by the way, what's your name this week?
What's my name this week?
What are they even calling you?
I don't know. You I mean, I can't call myself something. You got to call me something.
I'm gonna call you Crab.
Crab?
Yeah.
All right.
You don't know what that's in reference to.
Like K-R-A-B?
No.
Okay, fine.
I'll call you Krusty. How about that?
Krusty
Crab.
Krusty Crab.
Just Krusty.
Oh, okay.
So Krusty, I mean, I can't say that I'm the biggest Harry Potter fan, but
you enjoy it.
It was one of those things that was like when you were a kid in elementary school, and basically the bigger the book was that you read, you got points. So that at the end of the little 9 weeks or the little term or whatever, they basically throw you a party where you could just gorge yourself on like foods that would shorten your lifespan.
Mm, good stuff.
And the Harry Potter books are written at an easy to read reading level, but
yeah, because they're
still pretty
kids
big
books.
They're still pretty big, so everyone was reading them. I think that's how J.K. Rowling got her. I think that was her marketing strategy, was make these books worth a bunch of AR points, accelerated reading.
Yeah,
so that kids can poison their bodies.
Well, also her strategy was like, oh, let me just write a kid's book and like market it to teenagers and adults, and I'll make a ton of money because people are stupid.
Sure.
How's that for you?
Sure. Well, I think, you know, honestly, I think there's a parallel between why kids and even some adults like Harry Potter and why the Philosopher's Stone was seen as such a valuable achievement. I think the reason people really like Harry Potter is because in that series, those characters have an almost godlike power over their reality. They can do some crazy stuff with their magic.
Yeah, I mean, that's cool. I'm all about that. I'm just
well, to
not
be a part,
all about
to you know, when you're reading the well, right, but when you're reading those books, you know, you'll hear this, people are like, "Oh, I wish magic was real. Oh, wouldn't that be so cool if I could do this?" You know, if someone, I mean, I think it's a similar thing. It's magic. Much like the Philosopher's Stone is a substance that could free you from concern, from the chaos that is your daily life.
But find that in something better written and
better how? Bigger words?
Well, like just, it's
so
written,
it's, so it's
like
not it's, just the it's the, written, it's not just a witchcraft thing.
No, I don't care about that.
You don't like the writing style.
Lord of the Rings is one of my favorite movie series of all time. Nothing against the magic. It's she wrote a kid's book and kids read it, and then they got older and she kept putting more out, so she was like, crap, I have to write these for like an adult, teenager, young adult audience now. But she still wrote like a kid. It was just aimed at, you know, a little bit older kids. And it's just, it, I don't know. Everything about it.
My New Year's wish for you is that you can just let go of that's those salty Mm-mm. feelings.
I've tried.
You know?
I've tried. I've just, read books. I've watched all the movies. I haven't read all the books.
Get a little acid, and then that should even out your pH. Won't be so salty.
Nah.
Right?
No, I'm
good. Yeah, because salt is a basic substance, I think.
I'm not questioning the science. I'm just questioning my willingness to do that. So, yeah, not a Harry Potter fan. We'll say that.
Yeah. But I highly recommend, if you're listening, go look up 12 Keys of Basil Valentine.
Yes,
maybe
in
you're
theaters
the hero the world
next year.
Needs. What?
I said in theaters next year.
Directed by Wes Anderson.
With the soundtrack.
Who would star?
Done by the
Who would
hipster.
Be Basil Valentine? Who would star in
I'm
that?
Seeing either
I'm seeing
Edward
Steve
Norton.
Buscemi.
I'm seeing Edward Norton as Basil Valentine. He's a...
Yeah.
A down-on-his-luck salesman who happens to stumble upon a very large pastel-painted mansion where crazy
well, see, that's going to be hard because probably if it's a Wes if it's a Wes Anderson movie, everything is going to be pastel-painted.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's, yeah. But, yeah, it's going to be, I don't know, something like, I'm not
oh,
Wes
this
Anderson.
Is, this
I can't
is a new,
movies
this
for
is
him,
actually, but. This reminds me, this is a new segment we're thinking of doing. We're thinking, of, I've always liked the idea of doing bits or segments. So we're thinking stupid movie ideas.
I think if this we, could be a great movie, actually. I don't think this should be our
well,
first
no, no, no,
movie
I'm not
idea.
Saying I thought of this because this is a stupid idea. I'm just saying it reminded me. We're going to hit you up with some of those for sure.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
We'll get you guys. Don't worry.
We will. We'll get you. Get you some free ticks to... I feel like Willem Dafoe should be in there somewhere.
He should be in more movies in general.
I think so, yeah. I think his career has only just begun, for sure.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing about all of this, about how important the pursuit of the magnum opus really was in, you know, 14, 15, 1600s, which, is that considered the Enlightenment, the 1600s?
If I am remembering my... my Western Civ class correctly, then I think so.
Okay.
I didn't pay attention.
Is that, you know, you had big time scientists that we know, whose names we know today that were
Sir Isaac
dabbling,
Newton, baby.
Isaac Newton,
he was all
Robert
about.
Boyle, who is known for Boyle's Law, which I'm pretty sure you go over in 10th grade chemistry.
Yeah, it's all about how water boils and stuff like that. So.
Yes. No, I don't think so. I think it has something to do with volumes and ratios. It's a boring law. It's a boring law, but the guy himself, he played around with it. He believed, actually, for a while during his career, that the body could be resurrected after death through scientific means. Not just that it would require a mystical substance, but that it was something that could be achieved within his lifetime.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Sometimes you shoot for the big stuff and you come up with a boring law that causes people to hate chemistry forever.
Thanks a lot, Robert Boyle.
You can only manage your own ambitions. You cannot always manage the outcome.
No, you cannot.
Robert Boyle. R.I.P. Rip in peace, homie.
Yeah, rip in peace.
We'll boil some water for you.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I feel like we should go to a local high school and be like, and just bust in during class, chemistry class, and be like, are you teaching them the truth of the Philosopher's Stone?
And Robert Boyle's real work on boiling water and its many secrets.
That was my favorite part of school, though, was when the chemistry teachers did like the cool chemistry and physics are the ones that they always did the cool little experiments in class.
Well, see, my chemistry class
blow up or whatever.
We didn't do anything. We literally just like learned how to do equations.
I went to city schools for high school, so I feel like they had a little more liberty in terms of like what they could do.
Mm.
Is that a thing? Can city schools do more of what they want?
I don't know.
have no idea.
I didn't even go to school, man.
You didn't go to school?
No, I did. But yeah, my chemistry class, we didn't do anything but formulas. It was boring. I was hoping for a little Walter White action, you know, something like that.
Like hoping your teacher would become Walter White? Or just like you want to be poisoned by Walter White? Like,
no, that he would be a teacher like Walter White. Like, he, in the show, is such a good teacher. Like, everyone in the class, because they're portraying it as like the typical high school class where no one gives a crap about anything. Like, they're just bored, dumb teenagers. And, like, I sit and watch that show, and I'm like, man, I would kill to go back in time to high school and take Walter White's chemistry class, because I would probably know a lot more about chemistry than I do right now. He's a great teacher.
But in the show, his students didn't know, right? They didn't know that he was...
Yeah, I mean, they didn't know. I mean, I don't need to know.
So in this universe, you know the truth, but no one else does.
Yeah, and I just don't say anything. I'm like, dude, you teach me chemistry, I won't say a word.
By the way, his name's Aaron Paul, right? The guy who played Jesse Pinkman.
Yeah.
He's in the first episode of Black Mirror Season 4 at the very end of it.
Oh, and so is Todd.
He has a voice. Well. Yeah. Well, Aaron Paul just has like a short little voice line at the end.
Okay, I have not seen the first episode.
Oh, wait, if you haven't watched Black Mirror at all,
you're missing out.
We have high hopes for you. We believe in you. You can do it. You can just sit on your couch and stare at a screen for hours on end. We believe in you. You can do it. But make it part of your New Year's resolution, because that show is
incredible.
It's a killer. I mean, it's awesome.
Yeah, it's incredible.
And, I mean, 4 seasons with no sign of any deterioration in quality. Yeah, that's rare for shows that... Because I feel like a lot of shows that bust out, especially, I mean, anthology series in general are pretty rare.
They're not
common. Until Black Mirror, The Twilight Zone is the only, like, big one that I can think of that shook the very foundations of our culture and society.
Made people think.
But Black Mirror it's great. Check it out. It's worth getting 1 month of Netflix just to watch all 4 seasons of Black Mirror.
Oh, yeah.
It really is.
Very much so.
For sure. Do they know what they need to know about the Philosopher's Stone?
I mean, there's a few other things I guess we could talk about. There's like what the ancient Greeks believed the Philosopher's Stone was made out of.
And what would that
be? Or mean? At least the main ingredient. There are a few other things that go in.
Sort of the beginning.
Yeah, like the foundation, the building block. That's prima materia, or the first matter. And it's just a formless base of all matter in the universe.
Like a fart?
Yeah, kind of. But yeah, similar to chaos in the Greek way of thinking, ancient Greek way of thinking. Chaos was just the formless void that was the universe before life was created. And that's kind of what this prima materia, first matter, is.
So can you just hop down to the Trader Joe's and pick it up wholesale? Maybe the Sam's Club?
Aisle 27. Just
27?
It's right next to the coconut water and
the hemorrhoid cream.
Yeah, and the hemorrhoid cream. So just go down to your local TJ's and just pick up some prima materia, and you can create your very own Philosopher's Stone. I mean, you'll need a few other things like mercury and celestial salt, things like that, potassium nitrate.
Cream of wheat.
Yeah.
The basics.
You'll also need a KitchenAid mixing bowl.
And a slap chop.
Which you can get down at Bed Bath & Beyond. Sponsors, shout out. Yeah,
right. Don't forget.
Yeah, we're always looking for sponsors. So
you're making us sound desperate.
Hey, man, I need that money. No, but yeah, I found an interesting quote, actually, about prima materia. It's from something called the Theatrum Chemicum, if I am pronouncing that correctly. It's
I did not take Latin, but that sounds right. If you add six or us to any word, that's Latin as far as I'm concerned.
It's a 6-volume work on alchemy.
6 volumes? Wow.
6 volumes. It's a long one.
Get your money's worth, kids.
It's long. I think it was also, like, it took like 6 decades to get it all done. But yeah, so this quote is from that, and it says, they have compared the prima materia to everything, to male and female, to the hermaphroditic monster, to heaven and earth.
Ooh, that's rough.
I know.
The hermaphroditic
Sorry,
monster.
Lady Gaga.
What?
To body and spirit, chaos, times. Microcosm, and the confused mass, it contains in itself all colors and potentially all metals. There is nothing more wonderful in the world, for it begets itself, conceives itself, and gives birth to itself.
You know, that sounds beautiful. Cool and flowery, but it also sounds like when you're giving a presentation and it needs to be like 5 minutes and you run out of material at four and you're like, how do I just say some vague shit that sounds good so I can get a grade and go home and drink beer?
I don't know. I thought that sounded pretty good.
Of course you did.
I liked it.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah, I liked it.
But ultimately, cool. The Philosopher's Stone is all about taking the bad and taking the good and finding the facts of life. No, it's about taking something that is worthless or just kind of negative that doesn't have a use and turning it into something beautiful, something positive, and you don't need any kind of mystical substance or pseudoscientific wizard training to be able to do that. You know, feel down about yourself. Maybe in the new year, be your own philosopher's stone. You know, look at all the things that drag you down. Look at the dead weight in your life. Look at what's holding you back and just dump it. Just get rid of it. Turn it into
gold.
Fuel. Turn it into gold. Turn it into spiritual gold.
Exactly.
I'd like to give a shout out to my Uber driver from earlier today.
Oh, hey, nice.
His name was Jonathan. We had an in-depth discussion. This is the first time that I sat in the passenger
seat. Oh, up front? Like right next to him?
Yeah, because, ooh, well, that's strange. Well, I felt weird. Is it strange?
I mean, if it's just you, it's strange.
Well, before, it had always been like minivans that came, and so it just feels right to sit in the back with those. But this was a smaller car, and I don't know. I was like,
I've always sat in the back.
What is the etiquette for seat choice?
For me, if I was to put myself in their position, if someone is riding alone, I would not want them to sit next to me. It's just a little strange. Obviously it's going to be a full house, then yeah, someone's got to sit there. Mm-hmm. But if you're riding alone, I think it's just a little strange.
Being the guy who goes to the urinal next to you when there are plenty of others.
Yeah, open. Exactly. There's three other urinals.
It's not that they have bad intentions, but you have to wonder why they chose.
Yeah, why, when there's other options that seem more comfortable, why did they choose
the
most uncomfortable?
Sure. But we had a cool conversation. He told me a little bit about his past. He came from Asheville. He moved here, which... We can't tell you where that is, but he moved for love. He met this girl online who was from Eastern Europe, and she had moved to the United States. And according to him, they were kind of on off, and he decided, I have nothing keeping me here in Asheville. I'm a hightail it. I'm gonna get out there. I'm gonna pursue love with everything I've got.
Wow!
And so I came here and. He told me a little bit about his experience when he went to, Bosnia. His girlfriend's from Bosnia. He went there to Bosnia, or her parents were Croatian, so he might have gone to Croatia. Croatia's still a thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where Robert on Shark Tank is from, man.
Who?
Robert on Shark Tank.
Oh, really?
He's from Croatia. Did you not know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah, I don't remember his last name, but yeah, he's from Croatia.
Anyways, we had a cool conversation about breaking the mold, about keeping an open mind, especially going into the new year. The things you have to consider, that the people who you've relied upon up until now, they might not really know all that much about what it takes to live a fulfilling life. Even now, even if you think you've got it all figured out, leave room for doubt, and I think you'll surprise yourself by how much you learn when you choose to keep an open mind. I don't know, but he was a cool dude. Best of luck to Jonathan, formerly from Asheville, futurely from the world.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Thanks for getting my boy home safe.
China and Japan, and they have teaching programs everywhere. It was a cool person. That's my favorite thing about Uber is getting the stories of the people, you know, because there's a reason that any of us are doing the things that we're doing. But regardless of that, everyone has this whole sum of experiences. And so far I've never had an Uber. If they can see that you are enthusiastic and excited to know who they are, what their story is, they're very forthcoming. They'll tell you things that maybe an hour later you'll be like, you know, I was a stranger and they really opened up to me. Because ultimately, I think people want to open up,
or they see it as an opportunity to just to practice off their, and lie.
Yeah,
and to practice be like, their, oh, wow, that idiot bought it. Wow. Man, I'm not really from Kenya, man. I'm white. Like,
it's possible.
I mean, it is, but.
But yeah, stories are our thing here at Men Biting Dogs. So if you have a story, we want to know what's going on with you. If you're creating something, if you're some kind of an artist, if you create music, those cool, you know, metal sculptures you make them in your backyard out of scrap metal. I always thought that was a cool hobby.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
You make something, music, art,
writers interested in film.
Film too. Tell us your story. We want to know what you're into. We want to know what your deal is. We might not be the most qualified to give anyone advice, but if you feel like you're struggling with something, send it our way, because you never know. Maybe we can help you. Maybe someone else listening can help you. But our hope here is to create, you know, an army of lore-loving psychopaths. And that begins with you, the simple foot soldier in our
psychopath army. Wow.
For sure.
That's beautiful, man. I couldn't have said it better myself.
You couldn't have. But no, you know what? Don't sell yourself short.
Appreciate that, boss.
I know that it's a tall order.
Yeah, very tall order.
Very tall. He hates that phrase.
I don't so hate that much. Phrase.
Krusty, don't lie.
I don't hate that phrase. Come on there, bud. I don't hate that phrase.
But we are, even now, planning our next adventure into the wide world. We are actually hoping to visit ye old Salem, Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little about, you know, it's going to get witchy. It's going to get witchy up in here. Actually, when we go, we'll probably be able to do a live from Salem podcast. That's what I'd hope to do.
That would be.
We don't know when that's coming. Soonish.
Yeah.
It's in the pipeline. It's in the podcast birth canal, and we'll be squeezing it out for you any month.
Now. Yeah.
It's not gonna be. It's still very cooking. Soon. It's still cooking.
But yeah, so if you guys want to see that happen, then support the show. Tell your friends. Download us on iTunes. Tell your friends. Give us a rating, comment, all that good stuff, so we can make that happen for you.
Be gentle.
Be kind.
And you know what? I just want to close by saying there's no reason to get hyped up about the fact that, you know, it was the first of the year. Everyone seems to think that to be the newest, best version of yourself, you got to start New Year's Day and you got to grind it out until December 31st. That's not true. All the greatest changes I've made in my life personally, they came when I stopped telling myself I'll do it tomorrow. And I realized that when you get into this mindset of wanting something more for yourself, you got to take advantage of it immediately, because that mindset comes and goes unless you cultivate it. If every time that voice comes into your head of I can do better, I can be better, if every time that comes to you, you grind it out. You just put yourself out there. Make something. Sometimes you got to make a few turds before you can start crapping out diamonds. As soon as it comes to you, seize it. If you tell yourself, I'm eating food that's bad for me, don't say, tomorrow I'll go to the Whole Foods and get myself some greens. Why not? Don't do that. Throw out your junk food right now. Go to the grocery store right now. Use that mentality to your advantage. It's a battle. It's a war with yourself. But,
wow, you could write a self-help book.
Well, first I need to help myself.
Yeah, there you go.
But yeah, I mean, if you have aspirations for the new year, for the year of the moth, give us a shout out.
Yeah,
and if you know anybody also who can do you know, like intro music or we should talk about the logo.
Yeah,
we made the logo in about 5 minutes?
Yeah, it took about 5 minutes.
We poured our heart and soul into it because we only have about 5 minutes of humanity.
Yeah. But that's what we got, and I'm
feel like you can really feel our vulnerability.
Yeah, you know? I think the aesthetics.
Sometimes you just got to really put yourself out there.
Who we are as people, and it kind of really represents what the show is in a whole, and that is something that on the outside looks terrible, and on so you know, at its heart level, it's still terrible. So I don't know. I think it worked.
We keep it 100, but yeah, if you know anybody, shoot an email to thefolks@menbitingdogspodcast.com, where you can also find the feed of all of our podcasts.
And also check us out on iTunes. Like I said, download, comment, rate, tell us what you think. But man, we got some big plans for 2018. It's going to be a great year. Year of the Moth is coming in hard, boy.
It is.
It's coming in.
And that's why you have to come hard, too.
Exactly. So we appreciate everyone for listening so far. It's just going to be a great year, man. We're excited to see you guys throughout the rest of the year.
We are. That would be cool if you can give us your story at the beginning of the year. And when we do our episode 50 extravaganza thing, we'll see how far you've come.
Yeah,
we'd love to help you get there if we can. Because we are all in this together.
High School Musical, baby. Sign us out.
Woo!